Welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastors Bob Thune and Dusty White of Corumdale Church and Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about the threshold of non-ignorability. Bob, this phrase, threshold of non-ignorability, comes from a sermon you preached a few weeks ago. Can you explain in 30 seconds or so what that means?
Yeah, I'll do my best. This is a phrase I borrowed from Ray Ortland, a friend of mine in Nashville. He was here in Omaha a year or two ago and sort of introduced us to this concept. It's how he thinks about Nashville. And what he says is, hey, in Nashville, there's a certain number of things going on in the city at any one time that are interesting to some subset of the population, but they don't grab the whole population's attention. They fall below the threshold of non-ignorability. So they are not non-ignorable. In other words, they're ignorable. Somebody's graduated from college. Somebody's getting married. Somebody died. Somebody started a new business. All those things are great, but the whole city doesn't care. But if you talk about Carolina Panthers football, if you talk about country music, if you talk about Vanderbilt, you know, there's certain things in Nashville everybody cares. The whole city can't ignore. And I would say the same thing is true in Omaha. In our city, things like Berkshire Hathaway, Nebraska football, the College World Series, there's some things that are not possible to ignore because they capture the attention of the whole city. Even if it's not, I'm interested in that, it's just like, oh, the College World Series is going on. I can't drive from the airport to my house because it's going to be chaos. I got to take the north route and go up on 680 because there's crazy traffic, right? So these kinds of things rise above the threshold of non-ignorability. And so the question I was asking in that sermon is, what would it look like for the gospel to rise above the threshold of non-ignorability, where it's not possible to ignore the gospel of Jesus Christ because it's so defining or so many people are talking about it in our city?
On the same Sunday you preached a sermon, this campaign started amongst a handful of churches in our city to reach the city for Jesus. Is that what you're talking about? Just campaigns lasting for a month? Is that going to raise the gospel to above the threshold of non-ignorability?
Yeah, good question. And we were invited to be part of that campaign, and we sort of, as Corumdale Church, we sort of politely declined. I don't think it's a bad idea. Anything where churches are coming together in unity on the local level is usually a good thing, meaning it's overcoming sort of some divisions and some ways we sort of tend to be isolated sometimes. And so that's good. And I don't want to dishonor the importance of local unity among churches and sort of togetherness in mission. That's a good thing. That is not what I'm talking about. Here's where I think evangelical Christians get naive, is when they hear the gospel rising above the threshold of non-ignorability. Our grid for whether that's happening is, well, man, if 50 churches all partnered together to do X, Y, Z, that would certainly do it because we'd get on the news, there'd be an article in the paper, some people would be talking about it, get a lot of social media. That's all true. I don't know that that means it rises above the threshold of non-ignorability. It might for a day. But when I talk about the threshold of non-ignorability, I'm talking about such a dynamic change in the cultural context of the city itself that it can't be ignored persistently. So think about this. Right now, it's April. Nebraska football is on the sports page and in the news, even though it doesn't start for 5 months. Why? Because everybody knows it's non-ignorable, man. Everybody wants to know who they recruit and who's going to be the starting quarterback and what are the coaching changes. And, you know, like that stuff, just people are interested in that. That's what we're talking about with this idea of the threshold of non-ignorability. And so sort of collaborative efforts among churches, while not a bad thing, I think are not sufficient, and particularly they're not sufficient because I'm not convinced they reach the very skeptical non-Christians in our city. They help Christians feel more unified, and that's not bad. I don't think they do effective evangelism, and that's probably a controversial thing to say, but that's one of the deep convictions I have, is that doing evangelism well requires a high degree of contextual awareness, and in general, evangelical churches, especially in Omaha, have not been thoughtful about contextual awareness. And I think that's not true just of Omaha. I think that's broadly true in the Western world, that we have sort of very ham-handed methods of doing evangelism and assuming, oh, well, if we just sort of make a big splash, people will get interested in Jesus. And I'm just not sure that engages at the level of depth and nuance that's necessary to actually be compelling to a city.
So what would the threshold of non-ignorability potentially look like in Omaha?
I think moving beyond that, like one example would be planting a lot of churches. I think a movement of church planting in the city. So think about this, you know, at any one time, there's five or six churches trying to start in various parts of the city. But if there were 50 churches starting, right, if there's 50 new churches and those churches are all gaining traction in various neighborhoods and they're all faithful, sort of gospel centered, like theologically reflective churches, I think that that starts to raise the water level. I think Christians engaging culture in meaningful ways, whether that's art, music, politics, education, you know, solutions or being involved in conversations in the city that are sort of dynamic and interesting. So for instance, some of what we're trying to do right now in starting a classical school is I'm hoping that 10 years from now, we have a chance to sort of influence and shape some of the conversation about education in the city, not just in a school. And so those kinds of things, those are some broad examples of what I think sort of getting beyond that threshold of non-ignorability is like. But this is why we're committed to gospel communities, because we feel like actually if in every neighborhood in the city there was a healthy gospel community, meaning Christians who were loving the people there, on mission, not afraid to talk about Jesus, but also not obnoxious, you know, just like faithfully being present in a neighborhood, making disciples. And so like most of the people in the city knew a neighbor who was a meaningful, thoughtful Christian. I think that that right there is probably the key thing, because it's even more granular than a church plant. It's just a community of people in a neighborhood going, gosh, these people are authentic and they're enjoyable people to be around, but they clearly have a deep faith in the Lord Jesus. And that's intriguing to me.
So is it fair to maybe phrase it this way, that this idea of the threshold of non-ignorability, sort of the effects is very macro. You want it to be citywide, but to get there, it has to become very micro.
Yes.
And too often the way the church has approached it is we want to be macro, so our methods are going to be macro. And so we keep everything very high level, very broad. But what you're saying is in order for that to happen, our methods, the way we live, has to really sink down into the fabric of the community. So neighborhood by neighborhood, influencing areas of education and business and culture requires day-to-day relationships, day-to-day participation in the lifeblood of those areas. And so we have to sink further down into the fabric for this to happen.
Yeah, to probably oversimplify it, let's get 25 or 30 or 50 churches together and do an initiative is an attractional strategy. It's not a missional strategy. Now, I don't want to knock it. It's not that attractional strategy is bad. It has limited power to actually, at a sort of grainy, granular level, affect the dialogue of the city. It'll make press. It'll get a little bit of splash. It'll create some energy, but I don't think, you know, it's the difference between a team that has one really good year and everybody talks about them, and a team that consistently recruits top class talent and is always competitive. You know, one is like an anomaly, and you talk about them as like, oh man, you remember NC State in '83? You know, that was an amazing year for them. They haven't been good since, right? Since we just came out of March Madness a few weeks ago, where you look at North Carolina or Kansas or, you know, some of the teams that just have a good program and have forever. There's a different kind of influence that they have in terms of conversations and how people think and talk about them. And I think that's somewhat of a rough analogy.
Yeah, I think one way that helps me think about it is the difference between a campaign, like a mini campaign or like a mini rally, versus something something that's lasting.
Yes.
Meaning, so the difference between a politician maybe in office where they're there for 4 to 8 years versus the campaign that got them there. Once they're actually in office, I can't ignore them. They're there.
Yes.
And so that's helpful for me to think about when it comes to this threshold of non-ignorability. What would it look like for us to plant churches and get the gospel out there so much so that it's lasting? Like it's on every corner. Yeah. You can't walk away from it, and you can't just say, oh yeah, that, remember when we did that?
Yeah.
You know, it was like, that's there. And it's so much there that it's a part of our city and our culture and the region. And
yeah, there's also a little bit of, I want to help people think about this well, especially for younger Christians or newer Christians. There tends to be this sense of like, well, man, if lots of churches would do something together, that would seem like it would be great, because it, you know, there's unity and it seems like it would be a big impact. I'm willing to say I might just be old and cynical. Okay. But I've been involved in efforts like that since college. Like when I was in college, we did a big evangelistic campaign at the college I went to and brought in some people from outside in this huge, massive effort statewide. And then even in the city of Omaha, this has been 6 or 7 years ago now, but when Luis Palau came to town. So there's this sort of big evangelistic effort among churches. Again, I'm not opposed to anybody preaching the gospel anywhere. And Luis Palau was a big, you know, like a Quest Center thing. And, you know, that was a great... I stayed 10 miles away from that thing, and Coram Deo did, and we got a little bit of heat for that because people were like, well, why aren't you, like, come on, man, it's Luis Palau. Why aren't you, like, you know, supporting this? And the answer for me was just because it actually hurts the friendships I have with non-Christians. Like, the people I want to reach are the very skeptical, hardened, critical people who look at something like that, and they just write it off as like, well, yeah, it's Christians just trying to save everybody, right? Which, yes, it is. And that's our mandate and our mission. And I'm not afraid to say that to my non-Christian friend. But when we sort of officially associate with something like that, oftentimes it ruins the credibility that we have interpersonally. And so it's the trade-off, like you said, Chris, between something that's big and public and something that's very sort of personal and contextual. And that's – when I think missional church, I want to think personal contextual. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to be opposed to sort of big splashy things in the city, but I want to be very, very thoughtful about – when and how and whether we get engaged in those kinds of things. And so, you know, we're in a similar situation now where we've chosen not to be part of something. And, you know, people might look at that and say, well, you guys aren't playing nice in the city. And I would say, no, we support that. We're not opposed to that effort. There is a reason because of the mission that God's given us and how we understand missionary influence to work in the city that says, I'm not sure that's the way to go about it. I'm not sure that that's the kind of long-term lasting influence that's going to sustain itself. And so that's kind of a different way of thinking about missionary strategy. And I think there's a gospel connection here. There's theological reflection on context that matters. And I think I used the phrase ham-handed a few minutes ago, and that's sort of my way of saying, like, you know, it's not finely nuanced. There's not a thoughtful engagement of context and what's the cultural context we find ourselves in. And in light of that, how should Christians live as missionaries? There's sort of a, this will get press and this will be fun, and so let's do this. And again, it's not that that's bad. I think it's that it's poorly nuanced and it does not, I don't think, theologically reflect carefully on the realities of city context and of what would it mean for the gospel to rise above the threshold of non-ignorability? If that's our goal, let's not just say, we preach Jesus to this many thousand people. Let's say, 5 years from now, what are people saying about that? Is it that's something churches did? You know, Luis Palau came to town 7 years ago, neat. Or is there a persistent, pervasive influence because of whatever we did that has lasting effect?
Yeah, an anecdote that I've talked about in a few contexts with First City is, so I was at a conference several years ago out in Raleigh-Durham and heard J.D. Greer, who's a pastor in that area, very large church, the Summit Church. He was leading a workshop, and he was talking about the time he got asked to speak at the Martin Luther King Day celebration for the city. And he thought it was weird that a white dude was getting asked to speak at this event. And one of the city councilmen pulled him aside and said, you know, the reason we've asked you to speak is because in this city, wherever there is brokenness, someone from your church is there mm-hmm. trying to bring healing. And that we noticed that. Mm-hmm. That is something. Mm-hmm. And I think that is exactly it. They weren't, you know, it's a large church. There were a lot of people, but the idea was very micro in their approach. It wasn't this large campaign to create this threshold of non-ignorability. It was very much about life, living life with these people just side by side in the fabric of the city. And the city council is like, wow, we've noticed that your church is doing that. And so I think that's the exactly the thing where we're looking for impact, but that happens on that micro level. And when that begins to build over time, you have a movement, you have something happening.
Well, and think about the difference between those two things, Chris. For me to like something on Facebook, I just have to click a button. For me to have influence with my neighbor, I have to have a conversation and a relationship. Or for me to do something in the city that people start to take notice of, I have to engage in a personal way, right? So I can build buzz with almost no personal engagement, but I can't affect change yeah. in a meaningful way without deep personal engagement. And so there's there does seem to be a trade-off of oftentimes the things that sort of feel public and sort of like we're holding up a flag together. That's not bad. But again, that's different than, gosh, I've noticed that everywhere I go in the city, somebody from Coram Deo is involved. That's the story I want to be able to tell here. Is like, gosh, everywhere I go, somebody from First City or Coram Deo is doing something meaningful. And that's something's going on over there. Yeah. What are you guys doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
I long for our church to be in that situation where we're not ignorable because we showed up to actually help the city and bless the city. And then what if the gospel was that unignorable, right? So I think it would begin, right, with just Christians and a couple local churches making a difference. And then 10, 20, 30 years from now, being a part of something, being on the front end of something big that would be lasting. I long for that. I would long for my kids or our kids to grow up, you know, 20, 30 years from now. And even if they don't live in Omaha, to be able to visit Omaha and go, yeah, that church and that church, our heritage is attached to that because of this small little church over here, you know, that would be fantastic.
Here's another way to think about this, Mike, is to say, James Davison Hunter wrote a book 6 or 7 years ago called To Change the World about Christian cultural influence. And his premise was, man, every Christian wants to change the world. Like, that's what we want to be involved in. So I would say, whether you're a missional, where are you going to go with a missional strategy or an attractional strategy? It's all rooted in that desire, and that's a good desire. Like, we want to see the city change for the glory of Jesus Christ, and that's good. So that impulse, though I might disagree with sort of the shape that it takes in certain contexts, that impulse is good. And so we want to applaud that and say, that's a beautiful thing. What Hunter goes on to say in that book is that he feels, as a sociologist, the most effective way for that to happen is through what he calls faithful presence. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're describing, is like Christians being faithfully present in a neighborhood, in a city context, among friendships for a long period of time. And so that's where it's that commitment to faithful presence that is a distinctive of sort of Coram Deo's understanding of mission, and I think First City's understanding of mission, that would make us say, we don't want to throw stones at what other people are doing. We do have a distinctive way of thinking about what it means to be missionaries in the city that sometimes doesn't line up well with a big splashy campaign-focused kind of a thing, because mm-hmm. that doesn't always lend itself toward faithful presence. Now, it's not that those two things have to compete with each other, but we're very much committed to a faithful presence approach, which is a little different than a, you know, let's raise the banner and sort of, you know, and sort of hold something up in the city that everybody can kind of look at and go, oh, neat, you know, the Christians are all doing this. But that tends to be a little bit probably short-lived and not always effective at a granular level. I've used the word granular like 3 times in this podcast, by the way.
So curious, Bob, I mean, and you've mentioned this already, but and I'm asking this question sort of in anticipation for when this hits us, because it has yet to, but that charge of, well, you're not, you know, for the church, or you're not, you know, promoting unity among multiple churches in the city. How do you get into that a little bit more? How do you address that? And so in one sense, we're not opposing what's going on, but how do you say, yeah, but essentially I'm saying your philosophy of ministry doesn't align with mine, and it doesn't mean that I'm disunified from you, but we just do things differently. And so how do you address those charges that you are not for church unity?
When I was younger, I probably bristled at that more, and so I think I was a little more abrasive. I think as I've matured and hopefully grown in a little bit of gospel wisdom, I think I'm quicker to say, hey, we're not, like, I'm applauding that. I'm not opposed to that. Not opposed to any demonstration of unity on the local level. So praise God for that. But that we also are going to reserve the right to say no to things, not because we are opposed to them or disagree with them, but just because they're not the best use of our time and energy. Yeah. Because God's called us to a particular kind of mission, and that's not always a great investment for us. You know, honestly, as a leader, and this is part of the trade-off every leader has to make, is how okay am I with investing my time and energy in something that I don't get to shape, I don't get to speak into, and it's sort of handed to me, and here's the campaign that we're doing. And for me, the way I'm wired as a leader, that's just not how my leadership is best exercised, nor do I tend to resonate well with those kinds of things, because I'm a creative leader, and so I generally am going to want to put my own stamp on it, or I'm going to want to be involved in shaping it. And so, you know, I think I can sort of humbly say, hey, love you. It's not that we're opposed, but here's the framework I'm coming from that allows me to say, I have to choose what's a wise investment of my time and of our church's time. And so, you know, on the hardest thing about being a pastor is, like, when I make a decision, I'm also making a decision for 600 people. You know? So at some level, I'm saying, yes, Mike's not going to invest his time in that either because he's a member of our church. But that's the way it is.
Yeah, I think it's also good to note real quick there, too, that it's not like you're making these decisions all alone, too. There's other leaders and elders that you're consulting as we get invited into these things. And that's a fascinating way to think about it, actually. Man, if we only have so many Sundays and only so much time and only so much influence in the city and with these people for this short of life, you know, is kind of how I start to think about it, then what are we going to do? And the amount of things that we could be involved with, are these the right things? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's the same way that, you know, we start thinking about how to preach texts on Sundays and everything else, right? Like if I get 40 minutes and that's it out of 1 week, you know, what do I need to say? So if we approach all of involvement in the city and with other churches that way, it would probably change things too.
Yeah, there's a number of analogies, but you can use the whole, like with water, you can, you know, go wide and just spray and get people wet, or you can focus it and that actually starts to penetrate rock. So just the focus of time and mission that I think is helpful for our people too, to understand, hey, it's not that we're opposed to these things, it's not that we think we're better, but this is how we're trying to focus our time to have a threshold of non-ignorability. And we do that when we focus.
Yeah. And there's leaders, especially since this podcast is, you know, we always do a section on leadership. Leaders have to be okay with that. Like, it's funny, every time we make a decision like this and I start talking, other pastors have asked me recently in the last few months, hey, are you guys doing this thing? And I'm like, no. And they're like, oh, really? How'd you get out of it?
Yeah, how'd you, like, that's their question. So I was like,
I just said no, man. Like, so there's almost like this peer pressure thing that once 5 or 6 or 10 churches are doing something, it's almost like if you don't sign on, then somehow you're like giving them the finger in some sort of way, which you're not, right?
No.
But leaders have to develop the courage to say, God's given me a calling and a mission and something to do. And I always have to ask the question, is what I'm being asked to give my time to a wise investment of my leadership and of that missional calling that God's given? And if the answer is no, it's okay for the answer to be no.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think Christians have a hard time saying no to good things. Like, we have an easy time saying no to things that are bad or evil or just dumb. But like, if I say no to something good, aren't I a mean person? No, you're not. You know, Jesus said no to lots of things. In fact, Jesus told people not to follow him as his disciple. I mean, you know, Jesus said some like really stark things, and you know, he's a good leader because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference between saying, no, we're not going to do that just because we don't want to do that, and no, but this is what we are doing. And I'm thinking for our people too, when we're explaining why we're not, you know, jumping on these big campaigns, what we're saying, but no, this is what we are committed to. This is what we want to give our time to and cast vision for that. I think it's helpful for our people to start to internalize and understand why we do what we do. And we're not just kind of, you know, shotgunning and just kind of throwing things against the wall, but we do have a very focused mission and philosophy of ministry that we're trying to do.
So we've talked a little bit about this as organizations. We've talked about it as churches and church leaders. What does this do? What does this whole threshold of non-ignorability do for the stay-at-home mom or the average, you know, medical resident down the street? What does this do personally for a believer? Mike, I'm curious on your thoughts here, just for the average person sitting in the pew.
My wife and I, we just previously moved out of a house that we lived in for 7 years. And it was a rental, but we committed to being there and being somewhat decent neighbors, getting involved in a neighborhood association. It meant my wife walking our kids to school and becoming friends with the other moms standing in line waiting for their kids to get out of school. And so that's what it meant to us, to just be normal people living in a neighborhood. We weren't trying to go somewhere else to do cooler ministry, but we saw our ministry as being good neighbors.
I would add to that, Dusty, two things. One, it gives us something to pray toward. Every Christian ought to be praying toward the gospel's flourishing in a city. And if my prayers are about my family, my health, my job, my prayers are too small.
Yeah.
So I always want to raise people's prayers to be like, man, we need to be praying for stuff you'll never experience in your lifetime. You need to be praying for your grandchildren's generation and what they're going to experience. And secondly, we need a big enough vision that it compels us to make disciples. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's especially in a culture that is very consumeristic. If we're not thinking about the gospel rising above the threshold of non-ignorability, I'm not compelled to like give myself to making disciples.
Yep.
But if what I'm saying is I'm not about my personal flourishing or my own happiness in a church, I'm about the gospel taking over a city. That's a different kind of vision to drive right. my involvement in gospel community, my involvement in service, and my involvement in the church.
That's exactly what I was thinking, especially for, you know, like my typical life stage right now, right? Like you got kids running around, 36 years old, and it's everything, every minute is accounted for, you know, and every line item has a budget and we don't exceed, you know, all of those things. So that gets you out of yourself because the non-ignorability piece is mission and vision, mm-hmm. which makes you think beyond yourself. And it gets you out of like the mindset of like, well, I got to have my spiritual disciplines intact if I'm going to be a good Christian. And it gets you out of like, no, your spiritual disciplines might get you to the gospel getting out into the city. That's a piece of it. But it's a mission and a vision that pulls you forward into things that, yeah, like I'm not going to experience maybe. And that's just something to get behind. It gets exciting.
I think if every young professional, if every stay-at-home mom, if every dad that goes to work 9 to 5 saw their gospel community, their small group, whatever it is, as like a future church plant and stayed committed to those people mm-hmm. over time to watch that community multiply. When we're talking about church planting, you know, and not just a few churches being planted, but 50 churches being planted.
I just moved my gospel. My gospel community right now is taking 2 houses because of the amount of children. Okay. It's not because
which
it's,
is awesome,
it's not because it's like killing amazing, killing it in the neighborhood. And so now we got all these houses. But what's fascinating is these neighbors started joining us. And so we're moving the adults over there and having the kids. And I tried to cast vision for multiplication recently to some of our young leaders that I think could probably multiply a GC out of there. Really what that means is I leave. But what my vision there was like, man, what if you guys as medical professionals, engineers, and the people that are making up the DNA of that neighborhood, really like young professionals basically with legit income, you know, white collar income, made this gospel community unignorable to this just this city block.
Yeah.
Like what if you took, and this is in the most, I think, affluent part of the city. There's old money in Omaha in this area. Mm-hmm. And what if like the neighbors started being like, why do you guys use all those houses? And what's going on Tuesday night? What are all these cars about? And why are you dominating our neighborhood? And how do we get mm-hmm. a part of that? You know? Yeah. So it does start at the gospel community level.
So may God give you the grace to be a part of praying, hoping, and working for the gospel to rise above the threshold of non-ignorability in your neighborhood and your city.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that the things that we've talked about might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. We invite you to join the conversation by tweeting at us @CoramDeoOmaha. And we'll talk to you again next week on the Wednesday Conversation.